The Bench. The Bench. On ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Del Olale.
All right, welcome back, John. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. 7378-03776. Del and I now for the next hour here. We got Greg, who's been waiting, so let's get him in on the show. We got some stuff, football to talk about here. What do you say, Greg?
Good morning, guys. How are we doing?
Good. How are you?
Hey, good, thanks. Hey, listen, another Dolphins question. I wanted to ask if in the 2020 draft, if they passed on Jonathan Taylor for the other corner because they knew that Xavier Howard was going to come up for a big contract and they were going to have to let him walk, or if it was just a matter of hey, we have to have as many solid corners as we can get in this division, and then we'll add another Jonathan Taylor type of running back as we can. Is it just as simple as they like the other corner better than they did Jonathan Taylor, and they were willing to take that chance?
I don't think the Jonathan Taylor thing had anything to do with Xavier Howard.
Well, there are a couple. The Dolphins don't really value the running back position.
Right.
They're not going to draft guys high. They've proven that since Flores has gotten there. It's not something they care that much about. They had a chance to take Najee Harris. They took Jalen Phillips this year. Xavier Howard's coming off in 2019 where he missed a lot of time. He only played 5 games. He has a knee issue. It may be degenerative. We don't know. Now
he wants a new contract.
But another new contract. They gave him a deal despite missing all that time. But he wanted another one. He was upset. Well, they gave him the deal before, but he had missed games in the previous year too. Then he missed only played 5. They drafted a corner. They signed Byron Jones because they weren't sure if this dude could stay healthy. And now because he went out and balled out, and he's the second highest paid corner on the team. He has not participated in any of the offseason stuff because he wants a new deal. So Xavier Howard may not be a Dolphin. And he's also had the offseason stuff, never been charged with anything, but he's had some issues. One involving, I think, with the significant other, and then we had the shooting, like he was at a party where a shooting took place, I believe. So he could be traded because they load. Flores loves his DBs, so they loaded up on DBs this offseason too. So he could be sent someplace else.
So if you were going to trade him, what is still the most glaring need?
Well, I mean, they would do it for picks, and they would send a Noah Igbinoghene as the guy they drafted as your corner, and then they have guys that they signed. Justin Coleman they signed the offseason. So that's a veteran.
What did Igbinoghene do last year? I thought he was very raw.
He was. He
not
is.
Very skilled.
He's only played a couple
out.
Years of college.
He's a great athlete.
He was. He got better, but when Byron Jones was hurt, I believe, he had to play Stephon Diggs, and he got eaten alive because he's Stephon Diggs playing against a rookie. But he was better as the season went along, and apparently he's had a good offseason. So we'll see. And by the way, he's a rookie corner who didn't get a lot of time in practice because, you know, there was no practice time last year leading up to the year. As far as I think Xavier Howard is a trade candidate, definitely. And he was a guy who led the league in picks last year. But as far as what the Dolphins' biggest need is, you're probably another edge rusher. You hope Jalen Phillips is that guy. They probably would need to add another one, but they're not going to get that this offseason unless they sign like a street free agent like Ingram or something off Melvin Ingram or something. But what do you get for a big time corner under contract who wants a new contract?
Who's been a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Gets a contract, Jalen wants another contract.
Jalen Ramsey is another of those types, and he got a deal.
You got to give up 2 firsts for him.
Well, how much is Xavier Howard coming off 10 picks last year? How much is he worth? Do the Texans need a corner?
Well, oh, stop.
We're not messing with y'all anymore.
Stop. No. We're done dealing with
now,
you.
Now, we don't know how. I would expect Nick Caserio to be better making trades. I mean, maybe not on draft day, but for players, maybe.
Well, he's going to be extremely limited.
I honestly, I don't want to trade any picks for any players anymore. I don't want to trade for guys who have contract issues. No, no, no thanks. Just be, no. Sorry, Del.
So he's going to be very limited in what he can do over the next few years, as a matter of fact. SB Nation, Battle Red Blog, took a look at, well, they Pro Football Focus actually ranked all 32 teams and where their salary cap future is. And so not only are the Texans old, not only are they do they lack talent, not only do they lack young players on good deals, they're in cap hell. The next 3 years' worth of salary cap and draft capital held for all 32 teams. Number one team that's got in a, is in a great situation is Denver. Jacksonville is second. Indianapolis is third. So two teams in the division are in great shape, salary cap-wise, over the next 3 years. Where do the Texans fall as far as salary cap hell? 30th. They are 30th.
30 is bad?
30 is bad.
Salary cap hell?
Yeah.
Well, because
30th overall, 30th in active draft capital, 24th in effective cap space, 11th in prorated salary hits, 23rd in top 51 veteran evaluation.
You got a bunch of one-year deals. Like, what do they say is the problem?
Well, the Texans skewed the ranking a bit here by signing 39 free agents this offseason. Only one other team eclipsed 25 with 27, with the lion's share of those deals being for 1 year. As a result, they ranked third in 2022 free agent valuation column. But in reality, that's a quantity over quality issue. They won't need to replace many of these players. That said, they did spend the most cash in the NFL in 2020, and they prorated a good chunk. The lack of first-round picks the last 2 years on account of the trade for Laramie Tunsil doesn't do them any favors either, which is why they ranked 30th in active draft capital. So they're paying players. They're not. They don't have any players on the cheap, is basically what they're saying. And they're going to have to. And they're not getting any players on the cheap because, well, they've only got a few draft picks that they've got. And who knows if they're even going to make the team. But they're prorated 2021 through 23 prorated money. They're at $112,361,000, which ranks 25th. Which ranks 11th. It's a complicated system, but suffice it to say, only Chicago and New Orleans are in a worse place than the Texans over the next 3 years with cap.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's unfortunate. That's unfortunate. Two teams in the division, Jacksonville and Indianapolis, are in great shape.
But once you get rid of Deshaun Watson, it will hit you for a year. Yeah, and you'll be rid of a lot.
Yeah.
Because there's no way you're adding a quarterback that's going to cost you. You'll be on a cheap quarterback.
Yeah.
And cheap quarterback gives you all kinds of – I don't really see them as being in cap hell, to be honest with you. I understand what they're saying there, but that I don't really – forward as a long-term
realistically,
team,
probably.
Over the next 3 years, realistically, they're not. I don't think they're in cap hell.
No.
I mean, Tunsil's deal hits you, and then you're going to have, before you know it, we're already in year three of Titus Howard. Like, he's got to show something now. We're in year three. By year four, they need to make a decision on fifth-year option on Titus Howard. That's a former first-rounder.
Yeah. And then you've only got Tunsil for a couple more years. Yeah, a couple more years of Tunsil. That's it, and that's it. When we come back, why are the Aggies, aside from what they've done, why should they be a big favorite in the SEC this year? We'll tell you on the other side.
When it comes to sports betting, SportsMapBets.com is the site you need. From weekly betting guides to single game breakdowns of the point spread, money line, over under, and more, SportsMapBets has all the info you need to make the best play. SportsMapBets.com. This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Del Olale.
All right, it just makes sense now for the bad teams in the SEC, right? Because they have to play the good teams. So they're going to have the hardest schedule. So Arkansas, who's been a bottom feeder in the SEC, has the toughest schedule. Well, everybody has an easier schedule because they get to play Arkansas. But Arkansas doesn't get to play Arkansas.
Correct.
So Arkansas has the hardest schedule because they don't get to play themselves. And they're in the SEC West, where Alabama, Auburn, A&M, LSU, all of them are. So they have, and they draw Georgia on the road.
That's a rough one.
That's a tough one.
That is the return game because they played each other in Arkansas last year.
Yeah, so, you know, that whole thing is really crap sometimes for, first of all, it really does sway that West and East matchup that you get. Like, Alabama got Tennessee every year.
Hey, and they still do because Tennessee will fight and say that's still a rivalry.
And it's not a rivalry.
No.
It's unfair. LSU gets Florida every year, and Alabama gets Tennessee. That's not fairness.
In the last, since Nick Saban's taken over, it's not even comparable as far as who was the tougher opponent.
No, it's been ridiculous. South Carolina has the second toughest schedule, then Auburn, Kentucky, Ole Miss, Florida. Alabama comes in at 7, making some sense, although they should probably be further toward the bottom. Mississippi State, 8th, Vanderbilt, 9th, Tennessee, LSU, Georgia, Missouri, and the easiest schedule in the SEC, Texas A&M.
Who do the Aggies play in the East?
Well, the out-of-conference road game versus Colorado won't be too much of a challenge, and the Aggies draw Missouri as their rotating cross-division opponent. They've joined the league at the same time.
Yes.
So they get each other. In addition to that, they get Alabama and Auburn at home, and we'll have plenty of time to answer roster questions before the second half of the season. Simply put, they should start the season 5-0 and rack up several more wins between week 6 and the end of the regular season. The easy schedule is a big reason why Jimbo Fisher's squad is being looked at as a real contender to Alabama's SEC West throne.
And that's even with questions at quarterback. You have to replace Kellen Mond.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was a spring game, so who knows. But neither one of those guys was all that impressive in that game. So they still have a question. They still have to figure that out. But, yeah, it's time. That defense should be really, really good. They're going to run the football with Spiller. That they have a real shot. I don't know. Alabama's still Alabama. But, you know, Alabama just keeps racking up quarterbacks. They got to miss someone once, right?
Yeah. Well, Bryce is going to be the guy, though.
I know, but does every guy – there have been five-star quarterbacks who don't make it. Like, even Jalen –
with that talent around you?
Jalen Hurts took over for a guy because the guy couldn't play. Remember the USC game, the start off the year?
Yeah.
Alabama was like, ooh, this guy stinks that we picked the start. So they went to Jalen Hurts. So even Alabama has picked the wrong quarterback, but that was before the Tua era began. Are they going to never miss on a quarterback?
No.
Teams miss on quarterbacks.
Jake Coker's not a miss. It's just
not Jake Coker.
Way.
I'm not talking about Jake Coker.
No, not Jake Coker.
It was like Coop. It was before. It was after him. They picked a guy. He was wrong, and they went to Jalen Hurts in Alabama.
No, but I'm just saying.
Jalen Hurts sitting there.
And the last time you had a guy who wasn't a big-time guy was Jake Coker.
He was a transfer, too. It wasn't even their guy.
Coker was a transfer?
And he won him a national championship.
He transferred from Florida State.
I know, but he wasn't a dude. But, yeah, but they won.
Yeah.
But he wasn't a dude.
But they have had.
No, but A.J. McCarron wasn't a dude either.
They've had dudes here lately.
That's what I'm saying.
No, now they're getting dudes.
Can you get. I'm not saying Bryce Young has to be terrible, but does he have to be a potential first round pick? Are they never going to miss on a guy?
Well, but that's just relatively new now.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So when you're trying to figure out a way to close the gap, how you close the gap is you have to hope they don't hit on their quarterback.
They hadn't had a guy since Kenny Stabler before that.
Understood, but the gap has widened between them and everyone else in the SEC because they hit on quarterbacks now.
Right.
If they always hit on quarterbacks, you're never going to
touch
them.
When your third string guy is a 4-star,
understood. But that happens in a lot of places, and guys don't work out. I mean, 5-star quarterbacks don't always work out. Now Alabama has made it happen the last couple of years. I'm just saying, if the gap is going to close, you have to hope the Bryce Young thing, if you're A&M, you got to hope Bryce Young isn't the guy.
Well,
his
I
first
can tell
year.
You this: watching, he better stay healthy because I watched their spring game and the other guys suck.
Paul Tyson,
yeah, sucks.
Isn't he like Bear Bryant's? Like, aren't they relatives or something? Somehow, some way.
Well, whatever. We're talking about the Aggies.
Well, now. I'm saying Aggies have an easy schedule, but the game is going to be the Alabama game, and if their goal is to win a national title, which it should be, you got to hope the gap is closing, and you got to hope the quarterback at Alabama isn't as good as the last couple of games.
Well, you got a lot of hope after last year's Alabama game. Wait, no, you don't.
No, well, the quarterback's no longer there.
No, I know, but you got your ass handed to you there.
Well, you're at home, and you hope to play better, and Alabama doesn't have Waddle or Devontae Smith playing wide receiver. They'll have other guys who are supposed to be really good, and you got to hope.
Menchie's still there.
Mechie. And you got to hope.
Mechie. Menchie's is a great ice cream place.
Yeah, something else. You got to hope that – you got to hope the combination of Bill O'Brien and the new quarterback isn't the same as Sark and Mac Jones. You got to hope there's a drop-off. You could be like, come on. There's got to be, right? It can't be – the Mac Jones Sarkisian thing can't be equal to the Bryce Young Bill O'Brien thing, because if it's equal or better, you're not winning that game.
Oh, no, you're not winning that.
So you got to hope there's a drop-off
there's no reason to believe that the Aggies are really going to beat Alabama this year.
I'm not saying there is, but they're going to go into that game and they have a great start to the year. They're going to believe they should have a shot to win, and the shot comes from maybe it's a little off at the quarterback and OC position. Maybe Alabama's not as great.
It's not like Alabama wins every year, so.
True, but the Aggies haven't been close.
Not to them.
Yeah. So,
not to them.
So this is if we're talking about the Aggies and their prospects of winning it all or being great this year, the mark is Alabama. And you got to hope you have moved up a little bit and they have come down.
Yeah, I don't know how much they came down.
Look,
but they do have Bill O'Brien. That's the saving grace.
Yeah, and they have a quarterback that hasn't started. It hasn't mattered in the past. That's what I'm saying. Can they miss on a quarterback, at least as a freshman? Can he not be all-world as a freshman?
I don't know. I saw Bryce Young. He looks pretty good.
He didn't look that great in the spring game.
He was okay. No, he was a lot better than the other guys.
Well, yeah.
A lot better than the other guys.
So the Aggies had to hope for an injury. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So I'm looking at another story. It's a Jeff Passan story. Who doesn't like a good Jeff Passan story, right? And it's about it is about the longest article I've ever seen. But he's talking about everybody and what they need to do at the deadline. And he finally gets to the Astros. And the Astros, he said, as one person connected to the Astros said, two good relievers. That's what they need. Thing is, over the next few weeks, they're primed to get, and this is a real thing, I guess, primed to get Josh James, Pedro Baez, Joe Smith, Enoli Paredes, Brian Abreu, and Austin Pruitt back from the injured list. If they can't wheedle two relievers out of that, they'll get aggressive. I don't know that you have two relievers. First of all, we know what Josh James is. We know what Joe Smith is. We know what Enoli Paredes is. We know what Brian Abreu is. I think the two that are wild cards here is because we haven't seen any. Austin Pruitt has been Forrest Whitley .2. And Pedro Baez has been missing in action. He's been MIA the entire season. So he must have had the worst COVID ever, because it's months and months now that we haven't seen or heard of Pedro Baez. Apparently he's throwing now.
He completed a bullpen session on
Thank you.
Monday.
Thanks for getting up and doing something instead of laying on the couch.
Maybe he's really been sick, John.
Maybe he's just watching TV eating chips.
Seems unlikely. He threw 31 pitches on Monday. He's been battling shoulder soreness.
Oh.
But he's apparently nearing the final stages of rehab.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Stop it with the chips laying on the couch. That's why he was laying wrong on the couch watching sitcoms.
I feel like you're very disrespectful.
I feel like he should get out there. I feel like I'm sick of watching.
Well, you just watched
I'm sick of watching standing.
You just watched a starting pitcher leave the game early because of a shoulder issue. Don't you know shoulders are important for pitchers?
Mm, well, throw lefty then. I don't give a rat's ass. Get out there.
I feel like Austin, that's a bad choice.
Austin Pruitt is a guy who we've been hearing about for a while now.
Longer than Brad Hand?
No, not that long. That's the longest anyone has ever heard about him. I mean, we've seen him. We saw him last year.
Did we? Did he pitch last year?
Yeah, he pitched last year. He actually came out and he pitched. Well, no, I'm sorry, in 2019. He didn't get back. He was with
the Rays.
He started two games. And, yeah, we haven't seen him here, but we've been hearing about him for a long time. Like, all of last year and all of this year. Like, at some point, he's going to pitch for the Houston Astros.
Am I supposed to take your word on that? I'm like Gary Kubek, how he treated you. I'm just supposed to believe that?
Well, he had a 5-3-1, a 4-6-5, and a 4-4-0. So
that's encouraging?
It's a lot more encouraging than Belak.
Well, that's a low bar. At least he's not Brandon Belak.
At least he's not Belak. That's what we're looking for. You know what? At least he's not Joe Smith.
God, what a disaster this bullpen is.
Well, it's just not Anoli. Bring in Anoli with runners on.
Did you see
again.
What Anoli?
See how that works.
You
out.
See what Anoli did in his start? Not his start. His rehab. His assignment last night didn't record an out.
He can't record a strike.
Well, that would lead to not recording an out.
Let's start with recording a strike.
Well, that would. If you can't record a strike, you can't get outs. In his rehab stint with the Skeeters, Mark Berman tweeted: "Phase three hitters didn't record an out. One run, one earned, two walks. Yeah, not throwing strikes.
Let's start. You want outs? I want to start with something simple:
throwing strikes.
A strike. Let's start with that, and then see where we can go.
It was a rough one for him.
Oh, dude, it's so wild. He's got a whip, and he's so wild. Goodness gracious! All right, 713-780-3776. If you want to get in here, 713-780-3776, the number to hang with us.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Del Olale.
I mean, it sucks. I mean, there's no sugarcoating it. Like, you go out there and you give a five spot, like, it sucks. It's horrible. But, I mean, as a reliever, it doesn't, like, you just go out there and do your job more times than not and move on. Like, whether you give up at that point in that situation, whether you give up one or two or five, like, you gave them up and then we end up losing the game is what it is.
That was Rayleigh Belak Stanek.
You could pick and choose, but
which one gave up the five today?
But last night it was Stanek, yes.
Oh. All right. No one knows. You see what Kyle Schwarber is doing?
No. I mean, we talked about him a little bit earlier about how good he's been.
16 homers in 18 games. He's got 16 homers this month, and he didn't hit one until June 12th. He has been, like, this is one of the greatest home run months ever. Sammy Sosa in 98, we know how that worked, why that happened.
Yeah.
He had 20. In June of 98. This is the second most ever in June with 16.
Well, he tied a record for hitting 12 in 10 games.
12 in 10 games, yeah. No, it's he has 12 in 10 games matching Albert Bell in 95. Five of his games have been multi-homer games, including three in one game, tying a record for most multi-homer games in a calendar month. Harmon Killebrew, Albert Bell, and Edwin Encarnacion. His seventh first inning home runs tie Alfonso Soriano and Carl Yastrzemski for most in a month. And his 16 home runs in June, second most for the month. And he's up there tied for sixth all time in home runs in a month. And a lot of them are Barry Bonds, Sammy Sosa, Giancarlo Stanton, another steroid guy, and Willie Mays, who's not a steroid guy.
Stanton's a steroid guy?
I think so. Okay. I'm just saying, probably.
All right.
I don't want to put it on him.
No, you do. You just did.
I said probably, allegedly.
No, you said another steroid guy, and then I asked
allegedly, you. Now I'm adding all to right. that. Allegedly, I said afterwards. Apparently, there was an Austin Pruitt sighting. I see a picture of him warming up at the Skeeters Park. He was in the outfield. He was in his windup in the outfield. Sometime it'd be great if he was on a mound.
I think you're asking for a little too much at this point.
Yeah, I don't want to put any pressure on him, but it'd be great if he actually got on a mound sometime. That'd be great. That's all I'm saying. I'm just saying. That would be cool. Giannis, they're fearing the worst right now. Giannis hyperextended his knee, and they're thinking it could be a severe ACL injury,
which would not only impact their championship run this year, it would have some. It would have big effects on them next year too. Seasons only. They want to start. Yeah, season starts in October. He wouldn't start, if it's a major ACL injury. Yeah. He probably wouldn't be back until maybe the playoffs of next year. Maybe.
Right. If it's a major ACL injury.
We'll see. And that's what they're fearing, because we'll see what it is. I don't know if the MRI has been completed yet or if they have the results yet, but that should be coming down shortly.
This is their Chris Paul hamstring. The Bucks had a chance. I want to say they haven't been to the NBA Finals since Lou Alcindor in the 70s.
It would make some sense. Someone pointed out that which season, they asked this question, which season is more fluky? 2020, where you had three of the four teams have been kind of basketball royalty as far as success is concerned over their 10 years, or this year where you have the Bucks, the Hawks, the Suns, and the Clippers? Which one is the more flukier, when teams who never do anything are doing it this year, as opposed to 2020 was the Lakers, the Heat, and the Celtics, and then you had the Nuggets.
Why would that be fluky, the Lakers and the...
Well, the bubble. People called it fluky because of the bubble.
But the teams that usually get there got there, the
teams who've had success the last 20 years were doing it again.
I don't see that as fluky at all.
Yeah.
I mean, It was different. Yeah.
I don't know if it was fluky. You see this, but you look at the final four.
This seems fluky.
The final four this year, the Suns and the Clippers, with injuries everywhere, and the Bucks and the Suns.
Well, if everybody had stayed healthy.
Bucks and Hawks, I mean.
If everybody had stayed healthy, then the best teams would be there. The injuries is the main story this year.
Yeah, if the best teams stayed healthy, which means the Lakers would have been healthier this year, that means they're not in the seventh seed. They're not facing the Suns in the first round. We know the Clippers story and the Nets story too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the Sixers even, I mean, they have their injury is Ben Simmons' head, but even them, Joel Embiid had a meniscus issue as well. So, but he played through it, credit to him, considering some of his issues and people. And his inability to stay on the floor. For the Bucks, Giannis is out. The thing about the Bucks is they were down at the time of the dunk. That would have made it a 10-point game. And they had been down by, I think, 13 at the half. So they weren't playing well to begin with.
No.
In a game where without Trae Young.
Yeah.
Like, you should smell blood in the water.
No, but we've talked about this so many times. When a guy goes down and it's obvious who should win, it's obvious which side you should take. It invariably, inevitably, whatever word that should be used there, will go toward the team that has the obvious injury and can't compete. Lou Williams stepped up last night and was just like, "Oh, watch this now."
But there's some of that. But the Bucks were like, what? Or they 8 for 30? What were they from three? 8 for 39?
Well, and again, they go as Middleton goes. He sucked.
And that had nothing to do with Trae Young. That's just Middleton.
But it, like when Kawhi went down. When Kawhi went down, oh, they can't win. Oh, that's right. They advance. They win the series and they advance. When it happens all the time, a major cog goes down in basketball and that team ends up winning anyway. Now, over the long haul, they can't. They're not going to do much without Trae Young. But that one game, That was the bookie's dream.
But it wasn't as if the Hawks were just great. The Bucks were atrocious. They were bad. They had 38. Did they have 38 points at the half?
Yeah, 80. What did they finish with?
Well, I get that. You fall apart. Giannis, you're all shook. But 38 points at the half? That's
with
terrible.
Giannis.
Yeah. So credit the Hawks for not folding. But
they
Bucks
seem to. That's the
terrible
thing. They seem to focus more, play. Everybody plays harder. Everybody's more inspired. They say we can't win. It's us against the. Our backs against all that crap. All that crap.
Understood. I agree. The evidence says in a game, one game situation, those teams coalesce and go, look, we can do this. And the Clippers have proven that it's not just one game for them, at least. But you look at how the Hawks play. I mean, the Bucks played. They were terrible in that first half when they should have been about, well, hey, we got a real opportunity here. And they squandered away. And then it turned, and then you see your best player down. And they may completely be out of it.
It's inspiring, though. So and now that series, who knows? I mean, now that Giannis is down, watch the Bucks. Watch the Bucks and Middleton and Drew Holiday.
Well, it's every other game for Middleton, so we should expect.
And that's right.
It's a home game, so we should expect him to be
now
better.
Now with Giannis out and Trae Young, if he comes back, it's going to be like, well, now the Hawks, it's this series is over. It's the Hawks. Watch the Bucks win because this is what happens.
The Hawks did get a player back who played pretty well. Cam Reddish came back, and he played well. So they did get a body back, which helped their cause. So they're getting, if they can get Trae Young back, they're going to be closer to full strength than they have been in a while, which could be a little scary for the Hawks, particularly if Giannis is going to be out for the rest of the series.
Mm-hmm. So Chauncey Billups was introduced. I didn't remember the 97 incident. He had some kind of an assault charge against him, and he settled out of court or whatnot. And apparently this is an issue. It was an issue with a lot of people when Chauncey was hired from 1997. It's a long time ago. I get it. I don't know what kind of mistake he, we don't know. He had some issue. He and who was the other guy?
It was he and Ron Mercer.
Yeah, Ron Mercer.
They settled with the accuser. Now the evidence suggested that something, a violent sexual act, did occur between her and someone. We don't know, but she accused Ron Mercer and Chauncey Billups.
Okay, so that happened, and here is the media asking Jason Quick. Apparently asking Billups to discuss the 1997 incident.
Hi, Jason Quick with The Athletic. You said the 1997 incident shaped you in unbelievable ways. Can you maybe elaborate on that and how it helped shape you?
Jason, we appreciate your question. We've addressed this. It's been asked and answered, so happy to move on to the next question here, Aaron.
The Blazers are catching it.
Well, Chauncey was about to answer.
He was.
You could see him in. He was approaching the mic as to answer the question, and their PR people just jumped in and said, nah. Also, the Neil Oshie, the general manager, I'm not sure if that's his official title, but he's a personnel guy. He was asked about it, and he goes, look, we did the required research and looking into it, and you just, guys, just trust me on this.
We
believe Chauncey.
Trust me.
Yeah, take my word for it.
Listen,
what he said.
An organization would never hide or ever try to, in any way, shape, or form, misinform the media on any kind,
said,
especially a sexual assault.
Take his word for it is what he said.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to take his word. I'm going to take the guy's word.
Trust them on this.
Trust the process.
It's a different process.
Our due diligence we did.
We did it, and
yes.
it coincides with Chauncey told us, and you can take my word for it.
Yeah. We've investigated this entire
incident. We investigated ourselves, and we found no wrongdoing.
So you guys just trust us on this one, all right? All right.
So
that's what I would have said.
All right. You're Jason Quick. All right.
Okay. That's a bad look, shutting them down, shutting everybody
down. Particularly,
although the whole thing probably would have. I don't know how did they answer. He did answer a question.
Well, he said the 97 incident. Shaped his life and changed it, and that's why the guy had the follow-up, and then he was not allowed to speak to that.
Yeah, if I was him, I'd say, well, I, if you don't mind. Although every question then would have been about 1997.
Well, you think this is going to end with this?
No. Especially in Portland. That's Chauncey's like the Wild West right now.
Chauncey's like, man, Ron Mercer may have the right idea, just staying out of the limelight. Ron Mercer's not answering questions.
Is Portland like the worst place in the world to live? It's like 150 degrees there, and the police have all quit. Their emergency response team, 50 cops quit last week because it's a riot every night there.
Yeah, one of the headlines from AccuWeather is, record smash again. Portland infrastructure crumbles under 116-degree heat.
Yeah. Is that like make – and Chauncey's like, really? Wait. I thought everybody forgot about 97. Now we got this.
You thought
they're trying. Dame doesn't. Does Dame want to be there? Does he not want to be there?
Yeah, Brian Windhorst said Dame has not kind of jumped all in on wanting out. Now, I can't trust Brian Windhorst on this because if Chris Haynes isn't telling me stuff on Dame, then I can't. Then I don't trust any report because that's Dame's dude. If you want information about Dame, or at least Dame wants information out there, he tells Chris Haynes.
Well, Windhorst might know because LeBron told him, I've tried to get him. And he won't come.
Well, that just means he doesn't want to go to the Lakers.
Right. But that's Brian. Because everything stems from what LeBron thinks.
Sure. And I mean, all the players in the league run after LeBron and make sure he gives them their okay. Dame seems like the least likely guy for that. Like, I'm gonna take my cues from LeBron. Dame's going to be playing in the Olympics, on the Olympic team, so I'm sure guys will be recruiting him there, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, they'll get together. Hey, we got a lot of interesting stuff, news of the weird stuff coming your way. It's always interesting on News of the Weird. We got some good stuff. So don't you go anywhere. News of the Weird, finishing up strong here. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Del Olale.
All right, News of the Weird. Del, charities are going to be benefiting. This is a good story. This is a nice story.
We'll see.
Apparently, authorities have seized a truckload with 4,000 items. And including toiletries, cleaning products, and toys that'll be donated to local charities here that help children, or in Montgomery County anyway, traffic children, domestic violence victims, and the homeless. So this is good. So actually, some good has been
done. Then why are you doing the story?
Well, this is pretty ingenious. Apparently, there was a sweatshop in Montgomery County and the Harris County areas that were printing coupons that put pictures of the items that you get from stores, from H-E-B, Kroger, Target, Walgreens, and they were going in there and cashing in these coupons, which the stores were accepting. They got $200,000 worth of merchandise. That's pretty ingenious. Man, now they got caught and they're theft. Going to prison, but
it's not finessing the game. It's theft.
No, it's theft. Yeah. It's tough. But who knew you could print coupons? All they did was put the pictures.
You said a sweatshop was doing this?
It was actually a sweatshop. Of the criminals would then print up coupons in a sweatshop-style setting, and people would call up saying what kind of coupons they would need, and they would be manipulated and printed.
So I understand the people printing these things go to jail. Do the people who called up and used them, they go to jail too?
I would imagine they're going to be.
So what's the price? You pay someone for a booklet of coupons, a certain amount, and whatever their cost is.
Did you ever get those coupon books before?
Yeah, I know. I'm just trying to figure out what the business model is for them. They print out the coupons. It doesn't cost much to print these out.
Yeah.
You set the price so you can make your profit. You sell them for a price where these people go, look, this is gonna save me a lot of money. Then they go head to HEB.
You get $200 worth of coupons for $50-$75.
Yeah,
and everybody's happy.
It probably costs you what to print a book of coupons?
Nothing. It's a sweatshop. You got kids doing it.
Oh, okay. Golly,
come on.
You got kids doing it.
Hopefully?
Not, you almost said hopefully.
Hopefully not, I was saying.
Oh, okay.
I mean, if you want cheap labor.
No, you don't.
Well,
not when it's kids.
That's all I'm saying is congratulations to the charities. That's what I'm saying. North Carolina is passing a bill to stop prosecuting six-year-olds. Huh. Children as young as six can be prosecuted in North Carolina. That seems like it's a, I don't know. It seems like it's a little young to be prosecuted.
Well, what do the kids do?
Well, at six?
I don't know.
Do you think you should be going to, I don't know.
I think it's a question that needs to be asked. What are you accused of? Did you steal candy from 7-Eleven?
Hmm?
How much does that get you?
Mm-mm. You could be prosecuted.
What if you're in the lunchroom and you take some kid's hot Takis?
Now, get your ass kicked, that's what.
And if the kid decides he wants to press charges, how long do you spend in jail for that? For taking some kid's hot Takis?
Hot Takis? Well, you might just get a suspension at school. I don't know.
Well, what if the kid wants to press charges?
I don't know. You don't want to put a six-year-old in prison
it's
for
not,
hot
it's
Takis?
It's not
though?
What I want to do. What if the victim wants to press charges?
Mm-hmm.
What if little Damon says, Todd took my, or I don't know if there's any kids named Todd anymore, took my hot Takis, go to jail.
Mm-hmm. We've gone a little too far, I think, maybe, in trying to appease young children. There's a daycare center chain that is saying that parents should ask permission before changing their baby's diaper. So a child who probably can't talk.
Uh-huh.
Who has a filthy diaper, doesn't even know how to go to use the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
We need to ask their permission now.
Or maybe the kid doesn't identify, considering where this place is. I'm sure they're going to have that as part of the issue, too. That person needs to give consent whether they can be changed?
Yeah.
Huh.
Huh.
That's an interesting way of going about things.
We're needing consent for too many things now.
So if that kid can't give you consent because, you know, it's a kid pooping on himself, you let the kid just sit in his own filth?
Well, unless he consents.
Does he have to sign a form or he or she?
How many times? You don't know, but kids do not want to get their diaper changed. You stink, you little. You are just a gross. You're gross, kid. All right, so get over here and let's change the diaper.
And what if the kids was like this? Mm.
Excuse me.
I didn't give you my consent.
Excuse me. A Louisiana man said God told him to go to jail. So he went and got arrested for carrying meth.
So God wanted him in jail, so he decided to carry meth. Did he just walk into a police station?
Apparently he did.
Huh.
After the alleged, he had a divine intervention. That might have had something to do with the meth.
You think he was on the meth first, and he heard God.
I think it seems like there is an action and a reaction.
You don't think God's voice came first? You think the meth came first?
Sometimes God's voice does come after meth. Del, let me ask you, I'm watching a Skittles commercial right now. Let me ask you this. What do you think the record is for stacking M&Ms?
I mean, in terms of height? Or just number of
M&Ms.
Stacking M&Ms. We talking the plain ones or the peanut ones? Because
the plain ones.
Okay, that's easier to do, I think. I'm going to go with 105.
You're just 100 off. The answer is 5.
That's the record for stacking plain M&Ms?
The Guinness World Record reported earlier this month, 5.
That's not a world
when
record.
When I tell them it's a whopping 5, they're shocked. They want to give it a go and try and beat me. Unfortunately, no one is able to do it.
If stacking the record leads to only 5, then it's not a world record. We shouldn't even have it on the books.
Well, if that's the world record, world record.
You don't
give
know
them that.
That
man credit.
Some person some place could probably do it to a better degree. I'm not giving you credit for 5.
Do it. Don't talk it.
Or maybe that person's not the loser that this guy is and thinks it should be in a world record book.
Well, go ahead. Because let's see if you can stack more than five M&Ms.
Are there rules to this? Like if we get a suggestion from the peanut gallery, what if I make the bottom of them sticky? Like just put in your mouth and
no,
put
them- you can't. Oh, now all of a sudden, Spider Tech. You might as well play Major League Baseball.
It's very.
You're trying to cheat.
It's very lucrative.
World Book of No.
I'm gonna tell you right now. If it was as lucrative to play Major League Baseball as it is to stack M&Ms, there would be a Spider Tech controversy with the stacking of M&Ms.
We gotta test them.
Hey, I gotta check your hands.
Yeah. You got any sticky on there? No. If you're gonna play it straight, Dell.
Five M&Ms. That is not a record.
You're the Garrett Cole of M&M stacking.
Well, if they're gonna pay me like Garrett Cole, please do call me a cheater. That money's not going anywhere.
You ain't getting that money.
I'm a cheat.
Five. Try it. Don't try it at
all. I think anyone buying playing
too dangerous.
I think I have a problem with anyone buying playing M&Ms anyway. Why would you do that?
Oh, playing M&Ms are awesome.
Get out of here. Popcorn? Peanut M&Ms. Peanut M&Ms. Well, you have to add to popcorn. Peanut M&Ms are the way to go when they're so low. If you got to add to something else, then
M&Ms
it's not.
Are a classic. You can't.
Plain M&Ms are trash.
Downgrade
M&Ms. I'm going to say something that I hope everyone hears. Plain M&Ms are trash.
Huh. That's un-American.
In fact, they're so trash, they have Lance written
on
them. They have Lance written on the pack.
Home Depot with your
See,
dad.
You just messed up my joke, man.
What?
I said they're so trash, plain M&Ms have Lance written on the pack.
Oh, they don't. No, you're wrong about that. You're wrong for that.
No.
Peanut M&Ms are better. Don't get me wrong.
Of course.
But plain M&Ms ain't trash.
They're trash.
All right, we're done. Charlie Pelotto's next right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Have a great day, everybody.
This is ESPN 97.5. Real fun.